Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Psychic Teachers Podcast. I'm your host, Deb Bowen.
And I'm Samantha Faye.
And we are delighted and honored that you have joined us tonight as we are easing into this new year here. I'm hoping that we're easing into this new year. So we welcome you and are happy that you are joining us. And tonight's topic is the power of prayer. We're going to look at prayer from a lot of different world beliefs, world cultures, world views, and talk about some scientific evidence and lots of other things about the power of prayer. But if you are a regular listener to this show, you know that we have a few things that we like to do before we get into the topic of the week. And so if it's okay with everybody, Samantha, if this is okay with you, I'm going to start with probably my least favorite card in the tarot deck. If you're a regular listener, you know that we have now for some time been working our way through the traditional Waite Rider tarot deck, and we have finished the major arcana. We have moved through the minor arcana suits of wands and cups, and we are now working our way through swords. And tonight's card, or key, as it is rightly called, is the Three of Swords. And this...
I don't like this card either.
No, see? When this card shows up in somebody's reading, my usual way of beginning to address this card is, gosh, you know, it doesn't take a tarot reader to look at this card and tell this is not happy. It is a heart, a bright red heart, pierced by three swords, with clouds and rain in the background. So it is not a happy card. And this is one of those interesting tarot cards in that the right side up meaning is not so good, and that the reversed, if it appears reversed when I'm doing a reading, it's a matter of degrees rather than the opposite. So the traditional meaning of this card is a loss of love, an upheaval in one's environment, quarreling, discontent, unhappiness. If it appears reversed, there's still that same loss and sorrow and unhappiness, but it's not as bad, which I always find really interesting with this card. Do you want to add something about that, Samantha?
No, I look at it as the broken heart card.
I do too. Yeah, it's like, uh-oh, things are not good. Right.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, I think that's one of the wonderful things about tarot is that, of course, not only is it a divination tool, but it's also a way of looking at where folks just where you are and what's the reality of what's sometimes going on in somebody's life. So sometimes this card can appear when there is some kind of internal strife going on. So there you go. That is the tarot card for the week.
Done with the Three of Swords.
No, thank goodness. I'm glad. All right, and you've got a crystal for us
tonight.
Yes,
the crystal I chose to talk about is lepidolite. It's a lovely mottled purple color. It's easily obtained, so it's fairly inexpensive.
Let me spell it in the chat room. It's L-E-P-O-D...
I-D.
I-D. Thank
L-E-P-I-D-O-L-I-T-E. It will help to transmute or disperse negative energy that you're holding on to inside of you. So it's a good stone, like smoky quartz, to use for getting rid of the negative energy. The chakras that it works on include the throat chakra, heart, and third eye, and crown chakra. Mainly what it does with these chakras is it helps to clear any blockages. It's a great stone because it contains lithium. It's helpful to stabilize mood swings. If you know anyone who suffers from bipolar disorder, I would definitely purchase a piece of lepidolite for them. It helps to just keep the emotions calm and balance. If you're dealing with any type of addiction, especially anorexia, lepidolite can help with that. It's often called a stone of transition because it will help to... It will help you to recognize any behavioral patterns that you're repeating in your relationships that need to be changed. It can help to encourage a feeling of independence and reaching goals without asking for too much help, without being codependent. It helps to with any sleep disturbances as well. So if you are waking up a lot or having a lot of bad dreams, you can put Lepidolite under your pillow. It's also recommended for women dealing with menopause.
Hmm.
Yeah. Judy Hall recommends it especially as a gem elixir for a woman dealing with menopause.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I have some other stones that, and of course what they are escape me at the moment, that I have read. Oh, I know, coral.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Coral for women's issues. And, of course, all moonstones for women's issues. Okay. All right. Thank you so much for
You're
that.
You're welcome.
And so, folks, we have so very much that we want to talk about, and I think we have some things that we want to share with you that have come in on our email before the hour is over. So we're going to skip the meditation tonight. That's okay with you, Samantha?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And let's just move right into our discussion of prayer. Samantha and I have spent a lot of time talking about some of the points that we wanted to get across tonight and just some of the ideas that we wanted to share with you as we look at that concept of prayer. So let's start with, what is it? What is prayer?
I know the old adage is that prayer is talking and meditation is listening.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Prayer is talking to God and meditation is listening. Exactly that. And whoever it is you talk to. So, again, and we'll talk later about some of the commonalities of various world beliefs and prayer. But it is supplication. It is asking for something. It is... And even if that asking is in praise, because there are certainly prayers of praise, but it is always our attempt to communicate with whatever we perceive to be the divine, a higher power. That's what prayer is, basically. And I think for as long as human beings have believed that there was something bigger than them, something they could not see, there has been some attempt to communicate with that. In for example, indigenous cultures, many things got prayers sent to them. For example, in First Nations prayers in this country, their prayers to the thunder beings, prayers to the sun, prayers to the moon, prayers to the spirits of plants. So lots of different ways of sending out supplication for some kind of help or guidance or kindness, you know, to the thunder beings, please don't come down here and strike us with lightning, but yet bring the rain to make the crops grow, kind of thing. So there's this long history for as long as we have envisioned that we weren't it, that there was something bigger, there has been this attempt to communicate with that being on the other side. You want to add something to that, Samantha?
No, I just think that prayer is sort of an innate instinct in us.
Mm. Is it instinctual that we almost, oh, help me, help me, help me?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And how many times, I confess I am very guilty of this growing up, was, please, God, if you just get me out of this one.
The bargaining prayer.
The bargaining prayer. I have done that a zillion times in my life. And I don't know. Maybe other folks have. But, yeah, I think that's true. One of the things that Jesus said was pray without ceasing. And I remember over the years really contemplating that instruction, pray without ceasing. Well, how in the world can we do that? We have to stop and eat and think about other stuff and go to work and do whatever. How can we pray without ceasing? Well, there are ways to do it, I've learned. That's what crystal grids help us do. They pray for us. Do you agree with that?
I do.
I think there is a way to make everything we do a prayer.
Well, and there's a wonderful book called The Pilgrim's Way that talks about that. It's originally written in Russian, but there's a great translation in English.
Mm-hmm.
And it just talks about a man's journey to learn how to pray without ending, just constantly pray. And it talks about how it transforms his life. But I think that you're right. Many of us don't have the capacity while we're, say, lecturing in front of a class or giving a presentation at a boardroom or helping customers at our store to, you know, pray constantly. But we can use crystal grids to help us pray, and we can make our words of prayer, meaning that we're just very conscious of our words. If you think about St. Teresa's The Little Way,
mm-hmm.
where she would make cleaning the convent an act of prayer.
Right, that we act out our prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And there are lots of different kinds of prayer. There are those prayers that are spoken by rote. I grew up with a mom who we always said the same blessing when I was growing up, and she always said it really fast, and there was a part of the prayer, and I'm going to try to do it the way my mama did it because it was really difficult, but there was a part of the prayer that said, "Sep saves." Do you know what I have just said?
No.
No. Sep and save us. I finally got her to slow down one time long enough to translate that for me. And what she was saying was, accept and save us. But it came out, sep and save us. So we all, you know, we learned those prayers, God is great, God is good, or now lay me down to sleep. And there's a point in the repetition of those kinds of prayers, and certainly I assume at some point you will discuss praying the rosary. But there's a comfort in the familiarity of saying those, of believing that if you say the same thing repeatedly, it gets heard. There's a meditative ritual piece to prayer repetition. Something from you on that, Samantha?
Well, I just think the key, in my opinion, and this is just my opinion, is that people should not get caught up in memorizing, say, the exact words, or even with the rosary, there's so many thorough instructions. And I really do think that the key is just praying with an open heart. There's a wonderful story about a Buddhist gentleman who became a pilgrim, and he set himself up on this little island. And he wanted to pray without ceasing, and the prayer that he chose, the chant that he chose, was the Om Nomne Padme Hum.
Mm-hmm.
And really, if you do say that over and over, it is so calming. Om Nomne Padme Hum, Om Nomne Padme Hum. And this is how he decided to live his life, and he got a little reputation as this hermit on this island. And this very well-known, prominent Buddhist in the nearby town wanted, asked to go see him. And he was very well-to-do, this gentleman, and I guess they rowed him out in this little boat, and he got off on the island, and he met the hermit. And as he was leaving, he said, "It's been a pleasure meeting you," to the hermit. He said, "But you need to know that you've been saying that chant wrong. It's really said like this," and he said it a different way. And then he got back in the boat and rowed, and he was being rowed away, and the hermit ran after him, and he said, "Wait, sir, I can't remember. How do I say it?" And the prominent man in the boat looked at the hermit, who was standing on top of the water, and he said, "Don't worry, you're saying it just fine."
I love that. That's a great story. That is a great story. And so, I'm talking about Christian prayer here for just a few minutes because I think that's probably what a lot of our listeners may know about. But when Jesus gave us what has become known as the Lord's Prayer, did he mean that to be verbatim a chant that we say every however often folks say it, or was that a guide, a suggestion for the concepts that he thought we might want to get across in prayer? You have an opinion on that?
On the Lord's Prayer?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to go off on my tangent, but I just think everything we need to know is contained in that prayer. So I feel it's more of an instruction.
Uh-huh. That not so much just by rote.
Right. Uh-huh. I feel like in that prayer we are reminded to keep his name sacred. We're reminded, that he will come again. We're reminded about the power of forgiveness. We're reminded about
being kind to other people.
Exactly.
Right.
I just feel like everything is in there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that one of the wonderful things about prayer is that, and I, regardless of your faith, there's so many commonalities among them. If you look at the Lord's Prayer and you look at Baha'u'llah's prayer from the Baha'i faith, or some of Buddha's prayers, or some of the prayers to Allah that are found in the Quran, you find these wonderful similarities with that, the basic underlying concept of a prayer. And we're actually going to, before we close out tonight, we're going to share a couple with you that are really up on the top of our list of favorite prayers. But one of the things that I really wanted us to move into was a discussion about, does prayer work?
Mm.
And what happens when it appears that it does not?
Mm-hmm.
What is, in fact, the power of prayer? And so I want to share some research with you that I thought you might find interesting. In 1988, Dr. Randolph Bird, who was at San Francisco General Hospital, did research with patients who had had a heart attack or severe chest pain. And he found that patients who received prayer did much better clinically than those who did not. And a similar study was conducted in 1998 by Dr. Elizabeth Targ and her colleagues at California Pacific Medical Center, also in San Francisco. And this one was much more controlled. Dr. Bird's study was not controlled. There were what's called confounding variables, in that other people were praying for the patient, and there were all sorts of other confounding variables. So he really couldn't conclusively say that what he had done worked. But Dr. Targ, in 1998, conducted a controlled double-blind study of the effects of what is also called distance healing or prayer with patients with advanced AIDS. And what she found was that they survived in greater numbers, got sick less often, and recovered from the bouts of the complications of HIV and AIDS much more quickly than people who did not receive prayer. Then at Duke University, Mitchell Krutoff, I'm not sure I'm saying that right, is studying the effects of people undergoing cardiac procedures such as catheterization and angioplasty. And what he has found is that people who are receiving prayer with these procedures have tremendously fewer side effects from those procedures than people for whom there are no prayers. Now, does it work? Well, maybe. And I say maybe not because I personally am a skeptic, but because what science says is that how can you really measure prayer? How can you measure whether or not prayer was, in fact, the one variable that made the difference? And that's what the scientific community would argue with that. I don't know. I certainly don't know. There's also the notion of what's called the placebo effect, where there's the power of suggestion and positive thinking, where folks, if they believe they are being prayed for, tend to get better faster.
What about all those studies where the people having surgery didn't know they were being prayed for and they recovered, you know, so much faster?
And that's the other side of the coin.
Yeah.
You're exactly right. That's the other side of the coin. There's also the work of Dr. Emoto from Japan, his work in the Hidden Messages in Water, where literally there's this notion that everything on the earth has consciousness and that words have power, and that if you play a beautiful Mozart sonata to a water crystal, it forms this amazingly beautiful pattern, where conversely if you play Metallica, it looks really gross. So, I mean, you know, what is that about?
Have you ever heard the story of how Larry Dossey got started with his work on prayer?
Yes, I have, and in fact, we're moving into that next. But why don't you tell that story? Because I'm going to talk about Larry Dossey at length here in a minute.
Okay, good. I guess I can't just correct my points because I don't know the facts. I just have heard the story, but I believe he was an intern. You know, he was a doctor, but he was doing his intern.
Right, right. He is a medical doctor. That's right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he was still very young, a patient was brought to them, an older gentleman who was dying, and they couldn't figure out what he was dying from. He was from Jamaica, I believe. And he said that he had been cursed by a voodoo priest because he went for a reading with a voodoo priest and he didn't pay. And so the person put a curse on him. And so the story goes that Larry Dossey's colleague was raised in the South and was raised by a woman who practiced voodoo. One of his nannies practiced this. And so he knew, what to do. And he told the man that he knew how to do voodoo and he knew how to undo a curse. And he took a piece of the man's hair and put it in a bowl and he burned it. And he said, as you watch this hair burn, so does the curse that's been placed upon you burn away.
Mm-hmm.
And the next day, the man was completely recovered.
Yes.
And so, you know, again, is that the placebo effect? Is it just that the man believed that that would undo the curse, or did it work? I don't know.
Or did it work? Right, exactly. Exactly. Yes, and I do know that story, and it was from that he began to realize how much the mind has to do with healing, which, of course, even most Western medicine has now accepted that notion of at least mind and body connection. I don't know always about spirit, but certainly there has been that acceptance. There is also the notion that when we pray, and I believe Joel and I had this conversation this morning because I was talking to him about tonight's show, when we are praying for someone else, we too get benefits physically.
Mm-hmm.
Our blood pressure lowers, our heart rate lowers, our respiration rate lowers when we are in a state of prayer, and particularly when that prayer is for someone else. So that there's basically a double benefit in sending out that request to whoever you send it to. So
And I'm always told by people's loved ones and guides in heaven when I'm doing readings to pray. And it's so funny. I mean, sometimes, and I mean funny as in odd, not funny as in ha-ha, but oftentimes, you know, when you and I do readings, we meet people who are going through really difficult situations, you know, children who are addicted to drugs and, I mean, just really difficult things. And our clients will say to us, what can I do? What can I do? And whenever I will put out that question to you know, their guides or their father who's in heaven or their grandmother, I will always hear, pray.
Mm-hmm.
And so many times I think, oh, my goodness, this woman is going through a really difficult time, and I'm going to tell her, well, just pray, darling, just pray on it. Like, how am I going to do that? But when I hang up the phone from that reading and I do some meditation, I'm always told repeatedly, prayer is power, and it really does work. And there's something about our earthly prayers for our earthly companions that are needed.
Right.
I don't really know how to explain that. It's like my mother-in-law in heaven can pray for us, but I know that she's limited. I'm not saying that right. But all I know is that our prayers here on earth matter so much. And I'm told that almost every day.
Yes, you are. And that wonderful book,
Greed.
Oh, yes, Testimony of Light.
Yes.
I mean, she talks repeatedly about how intercessory prayer from us on earth matters and helps those folks on the other side. And I think that's just wonderful.
That's right. That's another point of prayer, you're right, is helping souls on the other side who are dealing with their life review and needing forgiveness from us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I want to quote here, I'm going to come back to Larry Dossey in a minute, but this is, I found this on the BBC website, and it was about a study that had been printed, just if anybody actually wants to go and look up the study itself. The study is published in the Archives of Internal Medicine. And again, it's one where they talk about intercessory prayer with people with heart trouble. And on the average of the 500 patients, so this was a fairly sizable study, the people who were prayed for had 11% less complications during their stay in the hospital, which was about half of the people that were in that coronary unit during the course of the year. Those who were the subject of prayer did better than their fellow patients. Although they didn't get out of the hospital any earlier, their recovery was less complicated. The researchers who were in Kansas City, by the way, said, we don't know. We don't know how to explain this differences. And what the study actually did was volunteers from a local church were given the patient's first names on a piece of paper and told to pray for a speedy recovery with no complications. So I think an important part of that is that you need to be clear about what you're praying for. You need to be very clear and very specific. And, again, I'm back to the Lord's Prayer where it says, not my will but thine be done. Mm. And we've got a great comment in the chat room that I knew was going to be important here, and that is that sometimes our prayers aren't answered, or at least we don't feel like they are, and it's that there's a higher, in my opinion, there's a higher will, there's a higher plan that we are not privy to sometimes.
That's right.
And that's so very hard.
Well, I always say every prayer is answered. Just sometimes the answer is no.
Right.
Or not now.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
And I think it's important to recognize that when we do pray, I think it's just important to say, look, here's what I'd like to happen, but your will be done.
Mm-hmm. And in my belief that your will be done is spoken with for the highest good of all concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And we sometimes don't know what that is.
That's right.
Yeah, and
that's the hard part of just living in this world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We don't know what it is. We have to surrender to that.
That's exactly right. And someone else wrote in, this is where faith comes in.
That's right.
And that is absolutely true. And, you know, I have over the years certainly spoken with folks who had no faith, who were not connected in any way to a belief system. And I have to tell you that really hard for me.
Yeah.
I can't imagine my life without my spiritual part of me. So sometimes the prayers don't seem to be answered, and certainly in devastating ways that we don't get answers the way we would want them to be.
And I think that's a time when we can really test our soul. I think many of us have probably had that experience where a very important prayer wasn't answered, and we did turn our back on God. I know certainly I've been there. There was a couple of dark times in my much younger years where I thought, you're not doing it for me right now, God. You're not answering any of my really big prayers. Who are you? What are you there for? And I went through very much a dark night of the soul. And as I got older and matured, I realized that there is a bigger plan, and we are just like two-year-olds having temper tantrums when we say, yeah, nope, you're not for me. Huffington Post had a good article on Friday about an atheist that just really made me sad and a little angry, too. It was about a woman who turned away from her faith, and she talked about how, and it's so funny because she was a Catholic, and she talked about a practice that she misses doing, and it's something that I do all the time. And you know how you just don't know other people do what you do? But she said that every time an ambulance would pass her, she would say a Hail Mary.
Oh, how nice.
And I do that every time there's an ambulance. I will say a Hail Mary, and I will ask that angels, you know, go with that ambulance and the people they're going to attend. And she said that sometimes today, even though she walked away from her faith 12 years ago, she catches herself saying Hail Mary. And then she thinks, oh, that's silly, and she stops.
Oh, no.
I know. And she walked away from her faith, from God, from everything, because she couldn't believe that that little wafer and that little thing of red wine actually became the body and blood of Christ. And I thought, holy cow, you're going to turn your back on faith because of that one thing?
Oh my.
You know, that to me, that's like turning your back on marriage because your spouse gained 10 pounds. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, really? You're going to turn your back on an entire... anyway.
Well, you know, here your favorite pagan has been known to say a few Hail Marys over the years.
Well, she talked, too, about how she really misses crossing herself. And I just want, again, this is probably something that everybody has already thought of, because, again, I used to think I was one of the only ones who said a Hail Mary when an ambulance went past. But I always teach my kids that when you are crossing yourself, you're reminding yourself to keep God in your head, God in your heart, God on your left side, and God on your right side.
Oh, well, now that's nice.
Yeah. And so I can understand why she would miss crossing herself. And I think, lady, even, I don't believe it is just a wafer and a cup of red wine, but even if it is, just, you know, cross yourself. Say Hail Mary. It's not going to... whatever.
Well,
but atheists do break my heart.
Yeah, me too. And that's interesting. I don't do a Hail Mary when I hear an ambulance. But I do send up a little prayer that begins, please God, you know, take care of folks, you know, make this okay. You know?
Which is the exact same thing. It's like the story I told earlier with the Om Namne Padme Hum. It doesn't have to be a Hail Mary. I think it's, again, just the intention of sending that light.
Absolutely. Absolutely is. We are past the halfway mark, Samantha. So let's stop and take a break, and then we have a great question in the chat room, which will move us into the next phase of our show, which is, how do you pray?
Okay.
So we are the Psychic Teachers. I am Deb Bowen.
I'm Samantha Faye.
And we are thrilled and delighted that you are with us in this podcast this evening as we discuss prayer. There are lots of ways that you can connect with us. Our new, improved, updated website, www.psychicteachers.com. And from there you can get to our individual websites, to Samantha's blog. You can also, of course, connect with us on Facebook. I notice you've been being very diligent about posting on Facebook lately. Thank you.
I've been trying.
You have.
Well, a lot of people read my blog, and then they tell me they can't comment on my blog. Like, there's something. I need to have our web designer look at my blog.
Oh, okay.
So what I've been doing is trying to post my blogs on the Facebook page, and that way people can comment there.
Oh, that's nice.
Because it's so fun and exciting to read people's comments.
Indeed it is. So on Facebook, on our website, email us at psychicteachers@gmail.com. You can always, of course, listen to archived editions of this show here on Blog Talk Radio, and you can download them to your iPod absolutely free from iTunes, where we so appreciate your comments, folks, let us tell you.
Yeah, please do share a comment. Please tell a friend about us. I can't tell you how much Deb and I love hearing from you all, and every single time the email starts off, you know, listening to you all has helped me so much. I don't know how I found you. I think that's really great, and we love hearing from you guys. So please do post a comment on iTunes, because it helps us to show up on the search engine quicker so more people can find us. And if you know a friend going through a difficult time and they might just need that confirmation and validation that there is something more out there, tell them about our show. We also have a really good telecourse that's available for download for $20. It's a 2-hour telecourse, or an hour and a half.
I can't remember, but it may be an hour and a half.
And it includes all the handouts when you do download that. And by the end of the month, we'll have four more on there.
Three or four more on there. We sure will.
We're working hard, folks, to get that to you, because we've gotten a lot of requests for more of those. Please keep emailing us your show topic suggestions. We've gotten a slew of them this week that Deb and I were just discussing, and it's great. It gives us more ideas. It gives us things we didn't even think about talking to you all about. So
yeah, and it's wonderful. And then it's also interesting when somebody makes a suggestion for a show topic, and we look at each other and say, gosh, we don't know a thing about that. Let's go learn this.
Exactly.
So, you know, as psychic teachers and as any good teacher, we teach best what we most need to learn. So it's fun to learn with the suggestions you all make as well. So thank you for those. So that's really wonderful. So, before I forget, also on our Psychic Teachers website, you can also see Samantha's CDs and her angel spray, although I don't think that's what you're calling it now, right?
Well, it's the same thing as my angel. I just called it crystal clear because I wanted people to understand that you can use it to clean your crystals.
Right, and her chakra bags and so forth, and my CDs. So do take a look at those, folks.
And your book. Isn't your book on there, too?
My book is on there as well. Yes, it is. Yeah. So back to the topic of prayer. There is a question in the chat room that really does move us into the next phase, and that is, do you phrase prayers in the positive or present tense, like manifestation?
I believe so.
Yeah, I do too, because everything is really happening in the now.
Right. Well, and I also think it keeps our focus on the positive. A story I always tell when I used to teach a workshop on prayer, and a story I would always tell is that when my husband was in the hospital fighting for his life, I never once prayed, don't let Mike die.
Oh, no.
My prayer was always, let Mike live, let Mike live. It became my mantra.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's important because it kept my focus on living rather than on dying.
Right. Exactly. Yes, and I think the universe, God, however, whoever you're praying to, responds in a different way when our supplications are presented in a positive way.
That's right. I look at it as though, you know, God, again, however you terminize that. Do you like that new word I just made up?
That was great.
Is a creator, right? Everything that our higher power is, that created this universe, is a creator and is constantly creating. And since we were created in God's image, we are co-creators. So we are always co-creating with God. And so if we are putting out negative energy, don't let him die, don't let her be sick, we are fighting against the goodwill of the creator.
Right, exactly. And the more folks you have working on something together, the better. Samantha and I were privileged this past summer to be asked to join a prayer group for a child who was quite ill. I believe it was leukemia.
Mm-hmm.
And we learned later that we were a part of a huge number of people who were praying for this child. And the last update I had, this child has no signs of cancer whatsoever. And we sent those prayers up in a positive way. And that's one of those cases where, you know, yes, and that was a part of the divine plan. It also may have been a part of the divine plan in other cases where folks have prayed and the person has died. But it's about what is a higher being and a higher answer.
And can I also add too, though, that even if the person does die, I believe that the prayers that people pray for that person create a clearer, more direct pathway to the other side.
Right. And, you know, I guess I just have to say, and gosh, I hope folks take this in the way that I mean it, and I'll try to clarify, dying's not the worst thing in the world.
Well, not for the person, just for those of us left behind.
That's right. That's right. And I remember my mother saying to me when I was younger that that grief is very selfish. Well, I don't know that I call it selfish, but certainly it is. It is self-centered. It is about our loss. But being passing on to the other side is not the worst thing that can happen to somebody. You know, it's really not. Can you help me say that in a better way, Samantha?
No, I think the whole thing is just such a touchy subject, you know, because I think for the person, like I always say, I'm not afraid of dying. The thought of dying doesn't scare me, but the thought of leaving my loved ones terrifies me.
Right.
So I think there's just a difference there.
Yes, absolutely.
And I know in the big scheme of life, blah, 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 but for the dailiness of living without that person, it's just damn hard, and there's nothing that's going to change that.
Absolutely not, and I do not mean to trivialize that in any way.
No, and I don't think you are. I'm just saying that's why I think it's such a tricky...
Yeah, it is. But sometimes we have prayed for folks to go.
Sure.
I have certainly done that, to release somebody from pain and suffering. I on winter solstice, I let my cat go, who had sudden onset of diabetes, and it was a hard decision. I do believe it was the best decision. It was certainly done in love and in hope for him for moving on to a better plane. And I remember as I was saying goodbye to him that I hoped that his passing would be quick and easy. And I wanted that for him.
That's right.
You know, I did. I wanted that.
I hear more from women than men. I hear from a lot of women on the other side, tell my children thank you for telling me it was okay to die.
Oh, yeah.
I hear that a lot. But I don't hear that very often from men. I feel like because us women are so naturally the caretakers, well, it's not natural for some women, but for most women it's just a natural thing where I think so many women are afraid to die, you know, and leave their children no matter how grown those children are. And I think sometimes they do need to be given that permission.
Indeed, and there's a comment here in the chat room that it is very hard and almost impossible to deal with the loss, even if you've given the person permission to go.
Mm-hmm.
And absolutely, it is. And that giving them permission is one of our most loving acts of kindness we can do to the person who is dying. It in no way changes or helps us in the tremendous burden of grief that we feel for such a long time after
happened. And we really can't hinder their progress on the other side if we do not let them go with their passing.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm one of the messages I got from my mom after she died. I held her hand as her spirit left her body. and I could sense her up above watching. I could see she was seeing. And one of the messages I got was how grateful and comforting she found it that I held her hand as she left her body.
Oh, that's beautiful.
You know, and oh, yeah, and how wonderful to be able to do that.
I just finished a great book that I recommend. I should have brought it for you tonight, Deb. Oh, I need to write things down. It's called Glimpses of Eternity by Raymond Moody.
Oh, I love Raymond Moody's work.
I know. This one is really good. It's about loved ones alive, healthy, and well with not a drop of morphine in them have been standing by their departed or their mom, their dad, whoever's dying, and have witnessed the other side opening up in that hospital room.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It is the coolest book. I really recommend it. It's neat.
Because
a lot of doctors will write off the stories of near-death experiences
mm-hmm.
by saying, oh, well, it was morphine, the brain was doing this, that. But for a healthy, you know, person, not ill, not going through anything, just holding that loved one's hand and seeing the things that he describes they saw is just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I think I'd want to share a quick story with everyone that happened to me just very, very recently that I still don't really understand, but I do think it speaks to prayer. Over the summer, in July, I had a dream. And I don't know if it was a dream or really happened, but I woke up and I walked into my kitchen. But again, I feel like, you know how you wake up into a dream, but you're still in your house?
Right.
And I saw my mother-in-law and my husband's aunt standing in my kitchen, and my mother-in-law pointed to, you know, nudged my husband's aunt and said, tell her, go on, tell her. And she said to me, I've decided it's time to transition.
Now, yes.
Me in this dream, I said, oh, I am so glad you've made that decision. I am so glad we were able to talk you into this. It really is the best for the family. And she nodded and she said, I know it is. It's going to be hard for me, though, but I know it's the best thing for the family. And Maggie, my mother-in-law and I were so excited for her that she'd made this decision, and we hugged her. And then, of course, I woke up and I remember thinking, why would I? None of it made sense to me. She's the youngest aunt in the family. She's 62 years old. And I told my husband, and he laughed and he said, are you kidding? She's not going anywhere. I said, okay. And she, you know, passed away December 23rd. She had a bleeding on the brain. And I remember in the dream, I had said to her, when will you transition? And she said, in the next 5 to 7 months. And I just wish I knew, like, why did she transition right before Christmas? Why did she transition a week before her son's birthday? Why then? I don't know. And why on earth would it be better for her to transition at 62? I don't know. I'm still trying to figure that out. But I've had that experience and a couple of others that have led me to believe that maybe a part of maybe we do have some say and when we go. I don't know. It goes against everything I've been taught.
Oh, and see, for me, that makes such perfect sense, is that we do have that, and there's tons of information in hospice and thanatology literature about people being really involved in when they go, and I want to talk about that. But tell me real quickly, because my mind has gone blank, what is the name of the book that just came out this year from the hospice workers, other something room?
Visions, Trips, and Crowded Rooms.
That's it.
I love that book.
There we go. I was just trying to tell somebody in the chat room about that. Visions, Trips, and Other Rooms.
And Crowded Rooms.
And Crowded Rooms.
Yeah. That's a great read, everybody. And that's a good gift to buy someone who's, I don't know about recently lost someone, because it's a little too much too soon, but someone who... you could give it to a friend, say, on the year anniversary of their mom's passing. Do you know what I mean? But it is very comforting.
Right. Somebody's just written in the chat room exactly the story I was just getting ready to tell. This is great when we're all on the same page. Yes, people wait. They make very clear decisions. My dad died of... bone cancer that had reached his brain. He was in a coma for 10 days. He was a severe diabetic. his wishes were no extraordinary means. That was his living will. And so for 10 days, he lived on just enough to push the morphine through his body, and he wouldn't die. And we did all of the things that the hospital and the hospice folks suggested. We had everybody I think he had ever known in his whole life come visit him and say goodbye and give permission and this, that, and the other. And bless her, a hospice social worker looked at my sister, who had refused to even leave the room, and she said, "He won't die in front of you. You gotta go. You gotta leave. Then he will go. He will not do this." My sister finally agreed to leave the room. We agreed to have a relative sit with him, knowing I knew that he was going to die. I went home. I took a bath. I ate supper. I plugged in the coffee pot because I knew the phone was going to ring at 2 in the morning. And it did. And how in that unconscious comatose state did he know? He knew.
He knew.
He knew.
And that's very common for men. They do not like to die with everyone staring around them.
Nope. They don't.
They like to do it alone.
My mom did not die alone, but she wouldn't die with my sister and me in the room. We had friends in the room with her when she died. So, you know, yes, I think there is some control in here. And gosh, I don't know how we got off on this.
I know. Let's get back to prayer.
Because we've got about 8 minutes left, and I want to talk a little bit about one of the things that for me and Samantha make this podcast so wonderful. Certainly our connections with you folks, but our willingness to honor and explore each other's beliefs, and certainly beliefs in many world views around us, and to help to bring to light and to consciousness the commonalities that we share in our beliefs so much. And I love that. And one of those ways is prayer, in which you can find such common ground. And I have in front of me a little book entitled The Interfaith Prayer Book. And I'll write it in the chat room in a minute. The Interfaith Prayer Book. And it's published or distributed by interfaithresources.com. And it has in it samples of prayers on different topics from, let me get it open here so I can share everybody, Judaism, Hinduism, Buddhism, Christianity, Islam, and the Baha'i Faith. There are no pagan prayers in here, and that's because we don't have any written formulaic prayers. Somebody has just published a book entitled The Pagan Book of Prayer, but that's one person's kind of view. We only have a couple of things that we do by rote. So there's really very little written prayer work from my faith, but I love that in all of these major world religions there is a call to prayer. There is some tradition, whether it's for example in the Islamic faith, and I never can say the word correctly, I'm so embarrassed, where every day, what is it, 5 times a day,
mm-hmm.
They are called to prayer by the shofar. And this same is true in Judaism. There is a call to prayer and to silence in every Christian denomination in a house of worship. And it's true certainly in Judaism, in Buddhism. So I love that there are prayers that call you to pray. I love that there are prayers dealing in every single faith with gratitude. Every major world religion and belief system has prayers as a part of its belief that say thank you, that we are grateful for whatever we're grateful for. There is always an honoring of the deity of that faith, of honoring the creation. Prayers of praise, I guess, is the word I'm looking for there. And then certainly prayers where we pray in all of these different beliefs for someone else, for people in need, for the poor. And then there are always prayers that we are able to say for ourselves in each of these beliefs. I love that all of the world beliefs in some form or another have what we consider in Christianity the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. You know, I love that commonality among the different world beliefs. Isn't that wonderful?
It is wonderful. And I just want to use two quick stories from the New Testament of the Bible that, to me, really do illustrate that prayers can change our lives and can change the, I don't know if you want to call it destined, but I do believe that prayers can, they are intercessory actions that can influence our lives. And one of those stories is the story of the persistent widow,
mm-hmm.
you know, who kept going on and on and on. And after Jesus, gosh, we've had students like the persistent widow, haven't we, Dan?
Mm-hmm.
And he was done. He was done for the day. He was headed home. And, you know, I love the personality of Jesus because he's so human in so many ways. And when he was done for the day, and he kept shaking her off. And she really wanted him to heal her daughter, and he changed his mind, and he healed her daughter. And I think that's a great example of how prayer can get our higher power to change, you know, his or her mind. The other story that I never thought of in this way until I read an article on it a couple of weeks ago is at the wedding of Cana, when Mary says to her son Jesus, you know, oh my gosh, we've run out of wine, you've got to do something. And he says, woman, it's not my time. And she calls the servants and says, do what he tells you. He's going to do it. And I
because she was his mother, by golly.
She was his mom, that's right. You do what your mom tells you. But I read this really good article in St. Anthony's Messenger by a priest who said that this proves two things. One, it proves that Mary will always intercede for us, even at the risk of her son's time. Because he was saying that when Jesus said, it's not my time, possibly Jesus was meant to stay with us longer than 33 years. Because that was the start of his healing work. And when he said, it's not my time, and she said, well, you know what it is, these people need you, maybe that act sped up his time with us. Does that make sense?
Oh, interesting, and certainly that was nowhere close to Mary's intention.
No, and I'd never thought of it that way, and I just thought it was such an interesting way to look at that story.
Mm.
But secondly, it does show that that prayer, asking and praying and intending, as Mary did by turning to the servants and saying, do as he tells you, really does prove that prayer works, in my opinion.
Absolutely. I'm a firm believer that it does. I really am.
One thing I'm always told in my meditations, whenever I do meditate and I ask myself, what do I know? I'm always hoping for an answer like, well, today this is going to happen. You know, I don't get anything specific like that. But what I do often get is, please pray for everyone you meet. And so what I do throughout the day is, as I'm walking past people, I just say blessings to you in my head, blessings to you, light to you, prayers and love to you, as I'm going throughout my day. And it's so uplifting to do that.
How wonderful. We have 1 minute, Samantha.
Oh, my goodness.
And so I want to use it with the following. Lord, make me the instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. And where there is sadness, joy. O Divine Master, grant that I may not seek so much to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive, it is in pardoning that we are pardoned, and it is in dying that we are born to eternal life. Amen.
Thank you for that, Deb.
St. Francis of Assisi. Everyone have a blessed week, and we'll see you then. Good night.
Good night, everyone. Be well.